A whistleblower leak suggests Credit Suisse accounts have been used by clients involved in serious crimes like money laundering and drug trafficking. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. An international investigation by reporters at nearly 50 media organizations into banking giant Credit Suisse appears to show accounts held assets worth billions of dollars on behalf of clients with links to crime. Journalists obtained records of 30,000 customer accounts from a whistleblower. Credit Suisse says it strongly rejects the allegations and inferences about the bank's business practices. The BBC's Ben King has more on that story.
The New York Times reports that the bank held millions of dollars for heads of state, businessmen subject to sanctions, and alleged human rights abusers from across the world, including Venezuela, Egypt, and Jordan. The report says it continued to do business with some individuals even after bank officials raised doubts. Switzerland has a long tradition of banking secrecy, which has allowed corrupt politicians and businessmen to hide money there. Credit Suisse said the allegations were selective, historical, and taken out of context. It said it was deeply aware of its responsibility to uphold the highest standards and called the allegations part of a concerted attempt to discredit it and Swiss banking in general. It says it has recently taken significant additional measures to combat financial crime.
That's the BBC's Ben King reporting there. Well, shares of Credit Suisse are down about 1.3% in Zurich at this hour. Checking some other numbers now, U.S. stock markets are closed today for President's Day. European stock benchmarks, though, are open and bouncing between gains and losses this morning. That's after Russia said no plans have been made for an in-person meeting between Presidents Vladimir Putin and Joe Biden. Earlier, the U.S. and France said a summit between the two leaders had been agreed in principle, so long as Moscow did not invade neighboring Ukraine, a Kremlin spokesman said. For now, diplomacy will continue at a foreign minister level. Well, for the first time, a dam on the Blue Nile River in Ethiopia is generating electricity. The $4.2 billion Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, as it's known, is Africa's biggest hydroelectric power project to date. The nation's government insists it will transform Ethiopia's economy, which has been severely damaged by drought and war when it is fully operational. But for more than a decade, it's been wrought with controversy, as the BBC's Kalkidan Yabital explains from the capital, Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia started building this giant dam over the Blue Nile in 2011. The controversy started immediately. There have been resistance and objection from the two downstream countries of the River Nile, Sudan and Egypt, because they're concerned that their water supplies could be impacted by the dam. They're also concerned that they're going to be dependent on Ethiopia's goodwill, essentially, once this project is completed. But the argument from the Ethiopian side is that while it contributes more than 80% of the water to the River Nile, it has not been beneficiary of this resource. It has tens of millions of its citizens living in the darkness. The official figure is around 60 million people, and they want to provide electricity for these people to electrify much of the country, particularly the rural areas.
And Ethiopia's prime minister this weekend says that this is obviously, as you've been saying, not only good for his country, but the region's aspirations to work together. Is there a sense that, despite this controversy, that all of the nations will be able to work together through some of these challenges?
Ethiopia has a plan to provide electricity to its other neighbors, countries like Kenya and Sudan. That's the plan anyways. This dam is expected to generate more than 5,000 megawatts of electricity when it's fully operational. But, you know, these are just words, because for the past decade, there have been multiple occasions in which the three countries sat down to negotiate and strike a deal, but that has not been possible. There is still no binding agreements.
Kalkidan Yabital in Addis Ababa for us. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
To Australia now, where the country's doors have been flung open to vaccinated international tourists for the first time in nearly 2 years.
I just haven't seen her in so long, and it was such a big thing to be able to get over here. We're so excited.
That's one passenger who flew from Kentucky to Sydney, expressing the kind of pure joy we've been used to hearing from travelers able to see loved ones as COVID restrictions relax. Usually about 9 million foreign visitors head to Australia each year, and though the western part of the nation is still closed to overseas arrivals, the wider tourism industry will now be hoping 2 years of pain are finally coming to an end, as the BBC's Phil Mercer reports.
International tourists were the lifeblood of Featherdale Wildlife Park in Sydney, accounting for two-thirds of its trade. The koalas were the stars of the show, along with a dazzling supporting cast. Domestic visitors have helped to keep the park afloat, but its managing director, Chad Staples, says the reopening of Australia's borders is a significant moment.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, we've been waiting for this now for over 2 years. We used to welcome people from all over the world to Featherdale because it's the most diverse collection of Australian animals anywhere. So it was a real tick box for people to come. And so when that goes from 65% of your business to zero, you notice it.
But while there's optimism about the future, in the tourist town of Leura, in the World Heritage listed Blue Mountains, there's also a wariness about expecting too much too soon. Kareem Angel is the general manager at Joseph Ann's Fine Chocolates.
It's not going to be a magic recovery. I think it'll be a slow start. It's a scary time. You don't want to go to a foreign country and get stuck. So maybe it'll be quite a slow start, but hopefully it'll build up and people will feel safe coming to our beautiful country again.
The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, said his country was going from COVID cautious to COVID confident when it comes to travel. He promised that international tourists who come to Australia would have one of the greatest experiences they could ever imagine. After almost 2 years, they're now being welcomed back.
That's the BBC's Phil Mercer reporting from Sydney and in London. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.